We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.
From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
Hey, what's up? Welcome to another episode of the Wildcast Podcast. Justin Spears here with Bruce Pascoe and Alec White. And we are here at Frog and Firkin because before every home U of A football and basketball game, we always come out to Frog and Firkin, record a podcast talking all things Arizona Wildcats. Before we get started, make sure you download the Wildcaster app. It's free and available on the App Store and Google Play. Also, make sure you subscribe to the Wildcast Podcast wherever you get your podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podbean. The Wildcast Podcast is everywhere. Guys, thank you so much for coming out to Frog and Firkin, talking all things U of A basketball as the Wildcats get ready to face USC.
It's a cold day today, too. One of the colder days of winter. It's in the low mid-40s today. It's supposed to get into the freezing temps overnight. But we're out here. We're hot and warm, and we're ready to go for this podcast.
And they said it's supposed to be the coldest day in like 7 years in Tucson. I think I heard that somewhere.
I don't think so, because, I mean, it snowed last year when it was like 25 degrees.
It did. Well, I think it might be late, on like this particular day.
Okay.
Yeah.
It's colder today than it was in Pullman on Saturday. I can tell you that.
Really?
Yeah, it was like, it dropped after the game, but it was like literally 50 degrees that day. Yeah. Very weird.
But you know what wasn't cold? Stone Gettings in that game against Washington State.
Yeah, his best game of the year.
You know, getting a double-double, his first double-double as an Arizona Wildcat. He was 9 of 13 from the field. I mean, he was phenomenal for the Wildcats against the Washington State Cougars. And this has kind of been the theme over the last several wins for Arizona. We had a chance to talk to Sean Miller today about it in his press conference. You know, over the last few weeks, all your wins, of course, you know, we're excluding ASU because that wasn't a win. But you look at the games against Utah and Colorado, and then this past weekend against Washington and Washington State, you have guys like Dylan Smith, Ira Lee, Jamal Baker, and Stone Gettings all step up. And Max Hazard as well. All of these guys stepped up, and it's all going at the right time because Arizona's turning that corner. We're now in the month of February. And this is where you can see a lot of teams create some separation. And if you're a freshman-led team like Arizona and you have talented freshmen like Zeke Nagy, Nico Mannion, and Josh Green, when you have veterans like this, you know, stepping up and being that supporting cast, it makes Arizona a pretty quality team. What do you guys think?
Yeah, that's exactly what they had to be. I mean, it's finally you're seeing that mesh of veteran role guys who really can help in certain spots and then the freshman talent leading the way day in and day out, and you know, for the first couple months of the season, it was hit and miss whether that would happen, especially once they started playing tough competition. So it's absolutely what they need, and you know, as it's shown, when they've had to rely on the freshmen, I think it's been tough in the late game situations. They hadn't had much success until the other night at UW, and then Nico Mannion pulling out the Pepperdine game with that crazy shot he hit. But other than that, it's been rough. So to have these veterans, it's huge for them, I think.
Dylan Smith brought up a good point today in the press conference when he was talking about the veterans step up, and he was drawing similarities to past Arizona teams because he's been here the longest, really, out of any current Wildcat on the team. He's been here since 2016, sat out, and then he's been here for 3 years. So he was on – he saw the Lowry Markkanen team, you know, with Kadeem Allen, Keanu Pender, Chance Comanche. He was here for Ayton when it was, you know, Parker, Jackson Cartwright, and Dusan Ristic. And those guys had a bigger role, certainly, but his overall point was you need those experienced players to go along with the talented freshmen to be able to close out these games, and that's what we're seeing right now.
I can't believe it's a podcast in 2020 and we brought up Chance Comanche.
Hey,
of all
chief.
People. But, you know, I think, you know, with this Arizona team, you know, they're, you know, right there in the middle of the Pac-12. There's this clump of five teams in the conference that could all very easily win the conference. And I think if I'm betting on any roster right now, I'm leaning a little bit more towards Arizona. Of course, you know, we've watched them all throughout the year, but when you have talented freshmen like this and you mix in the veterans, I mean, they look, you know, pretty solid. But then outside of Arizona, you got Oregon, and Oregon has probably the conference's best player in Peyton Pritchard. What are your guys' thoughts on just the overall Pac-12 race and where Arizona stands right now?
Well, they have, yeah, I think they have a good, certainly a good shot at it with 10 games left, 6 at home. They get the Bay Area trip, which granted will be a little tougher this year with Stanford playing the way they are, but Arizona usually plays very well up there. But I still think Oregon was picked to win, and I think you still have to pick them at this point. They've actually played two more games than everybody else. They've already played 10. I mean,
well, they almost tripped up against Cal.
Yeah, but everybody's had a game like that. You know, all the teams at the top have had a weird game like that that just doesn't make sense. Arizona's was at Oregon State. And Oregon, they've got Oregon State on Saturday, but after that, I think they only have two more home games, two more road games, and that's in Arizona here, and the rest are at home. So that's a huge advantage for them. It'll be interesting, but I think the bigger picture is we got five teams with three losses at barely the midway point. It's, you know, usually 15-3, 14-4 wins you the league. This might be a year where maybe, you know, a 13-5, there's going to be maybe two teams tied, and there's going to be a whole bunch of teams at 12-6. It's nobody's running away with this thing except maybe Oregon has the potential, and Arizona, if they really keep going, certainly does too.
Alec?
I think Arizona and Oregon have really good chances. I'm going through Colorado's schedule right now. They're right in that mix. Their schedule gets pretty tough.
It's tough.
In February. They host Cal and Stanford, which can be tough. Then they go to the Oregon schools. They host LA. Then they go back to, they face at Cal, at Stanford, and then at Utah. So their last three games are on the road to close out the season, which could be very tough for them. So right now I like Arizona and Oregon. And Stanford, they're certainly a surprise, and I think right now you have to lump them as well in that mix because they've proven they can beat top teams. They beat Oregon by 10 over the weekend, so Stanford's certainly in the thick of it right now. But if I had to give the edge to one team, I would still give it to Oregon.
And you know what's impressive about Stanford is they play so tough. You know, they play like every single possession matters. Jared Haas and his coaching staff, they actually keep track of the number of times players die for balls. I think Dejon Davis is their leading guy, but they keep, you know, these weird stats, pretty much hustle stats. And it's worked so far this year as a trash can rolls by us. it's worked so far this year. I mean, how gritty and how tough they've played. They don't have players that people are talking about being first round picks in the NBA draft, but yet they've been probably one of the more surprising teams this year in the Pac-12. Bruce, what do you think about Stanford?
Well, I think Tyrell and Terry is getting some NBA attention. He may not be a bona fide or for sure first rounder, but he's really emerged. And, you know, kind of like Zeke Nagy, not only did they play together in Minnesota, but it makes you wonder who was scouting Minnesota prep stars, because he was four-star guy, kind of like Zeke was until the end. People don't realize how good he was.
So Minnesota's a hotbed of
talent.
Yeah,
I mean, I remember seeing that team, and some of the real recruiting guys were saying, oh, this team you got to watch, they're called D1 Minnesota. I had no idea. And apparently the team was loaded with I think, four high-level, high-major players, Terry and Najee among them. But anyway, no, I mean, and, you know, DeSilva's kind of emerged, too. He's a real versatile, long, smart player. You know, he went off. In fact, I think he kind of stole the Pac-12 Player of the Week award away from Stone Gettings. I thought Gettings would have a good shot after Arizona won twice, and then DeSilva went out and had whatever he just destroyed Oregon, and they won that game. So you had to give it to him. And like you said, they're aggressive. They hustle. You know, I think Jared Haas made his his calling as a player was floor burns. I mean, he wrote a book about it, I think, or something like that. And so that, you know, he's now that he's been at Stanford for a while, he's got all his own players and sort of that culture's taking place. And, you know, it's really a surprise because they lost so many guys. They lost guys early to the pros. They lost some puzzling transfers. That Cormac Ryan went to Notre Dame, I think it was, and it was like guys don't usually transfer from Stanford. That was especially guys who play, and he was. It was very odd. I didn't expect this quite from him.
Where did you vote Stanford at the start of the year?
Well, I think because of that, I think I had him like eighth, or I remember. I don't know off the top of my head. I believe it was somewhere between 7 and 9. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah. And I think that's true with just about. I think they were voted that way by everybody on the aggregate. Yeah.
You know, another theme of the Sean Miller press conference earlier today, we talked about the quality of the Pac-12. You know, teams like Stanford emerging and really being a surprising team. But then you look, you know, top to bottom and all these teams tripping up on the road. Like you mentioned, Arizona, Oregon State, Oregon against Cal. It is so tough to win on the road in this conference. We used to look at any game and say, okay, that's an easy win for Arizona. That's an easy win for Oregon or UCLA. Nothing is given anymore in this conference. And Sean Miller compared it to the 2016-17 season when the conference was so top-heavy with Oregon, UCLA, and Arizona, and then everybody else. Where this year, you have more quality, or I should say quantity, teams, because from top to bottom, you can really lose to any team in the conference.
You can make that argument in college. Across college basketball, you'd look at the results from this past weekend. Villanova, number 8 in the country, fell at home by 15 to Creighton. Xavier beat top 10 Seton Hall with Seton Hall at home. Unranked Stanford beat Oregon. Auburn beat Kentucky. Wisconsin beat Michigan State. So, I mean, you just go week in, week out, and it shows just the parity across college basketball and that they're so... You know, the Pac-12, I think, right now, I think is a very strong conference, even though we don't have, it's not as top heavy as it was with you just mentioned with the 2016-17 team where Oregon, UCLA, and U of A were ranked all in the top 10. But it's still a very strong conference, and, you know, any one of these teams can make a run in March at that top.
That's true, although I will say the last couple of years, you could guarantee, you could be pretty sure you're going to win against Cal and you're going to win against Washington State if you're one of the best teams. That's not true this year because both of those programs hired really good coaches who know what they're doing, X knows why. They may not have all their guys in place yet, but they've already both turned the corner there, what they're doing, and especially at Cal with what Mark Fox is doing. I think that's really been a surprise. But it's not, if you look at his history, he was really good at Nevada. Then he went to Georgia where he's trying to deal with the AAU scene and getting players and not maybe getting the kind of players people want him to get and didn't have the success that he had at Nevada. But if you base him on who he has, he does well with what who he has, and that's what he's doing right now at Cal.
Sean Miller said in his presser that if he were to vote for the Pac-12 Coach of the Year, he said he picked Jared Haase from Stanford. Are you in the same boat, Bruce?
Yeah, I mean it's I think I'd probably have to go there because those are usually based on expectations versus how you finish, and certainly somebody who's picked, they might have been picked 9th or 10th in the official poll, and to see the way they played, but there's a lot to go. I think, you know, honestly, you can make a case for either of those guys at Cal and Washington State if they pick up a couple more games here. But usually it tends to be the coach who finishes in the top 4, 5, 6 teams that have expectations that were really low. That's often the case.
Stanford, I just pulled up the ballot of votes from the preseason media poll. Stanford was picked 10th.
Yeah, yeah.
Wow. And now they're right there in the mix to win the conference.
Yeah.
It's amazing. You know, but, of course...
That said, I will defend us as media for voting. Most of our picks are right, except for that. And the fact that Washington's been a disappointment.
You just flip-flop Washington
and Stanford.
And Stanford. Yeah. And you're good.
What's been up with Washington lately? You know, they're the worst team in the Pac-12. Is it they lost too much veterans? Like, they lost guys like Matisse Thybulle, Noah Dickerson, Noel as well. I mean, what's been going on with Washington? Yeah. Because... we've heard all offseason, man, this recruiting class that Mike Hopkins has put together, we could see Washington compete at the top of the Pac-12, and now they're at the bottom.
Well, I think Kwadi Green has a lot to do with it. He had them going the point guard. He's a tremendous point guard and was declared academically ineligible just like a week into Pac-12 play, I think. So, and without him, I believe the stat is like they're 1-8 or something like that. And that has a lot to do with it. He was kind of piecing it together. They did lose a lot of guys, and that was huge. They have, you know, tremendous – they got 2 5-star centers, you know, or big guys in there, and with Stewart and McDaniels, and they're tremendous. But like Arizona's seen, you need more than freshmen, as good as the freshmen are. And, you know, without Green, who is one of the veterans, and certainly being at that point guard role, really tied that all together. And without him, they've been a little bit lost. I mean, they've tried 3 different guys at point guards. They basically been going Jamal Bey there, who's more of a 2 guard. And it's just, I think it's really, even just talking about one guy, I think it makes a really significant difference with them.
All right, guys, let's move ahead to this weekend, because Arizona has a homestand against USC and UCLA. Two teams that have different stories. I think both of you guys can agree with me here. USC overall has the better team, but lately these guys have been playing some impressive basketball under Mick Cronin, you know, putting together some wins. You know, they've shown, you know, some fight, and they're playing tough defense under him. And I know that's really hard to establish that at a place like UCLA, but I think the LA schools are going to be quite a challenge for Arizona this week. Starting off with Thursday night's game against USC, what challenge do you see USC presenting to Arizona?
Well, I think, you know, Miller talked about, I mean, it really is rebounding. It has a lot to do with it, but basically in general, it's the front court that SC has. They might be as good as any front court in the country.
Onyeka.
With Onyeka Okongwu and Brkosovic, and then they've got Mobley as well, and that's really formidable. And they're really good on the offensive glass too. That's been a key for them, is just getting second shots, and that's not been one of Arizona's strong points until recently. Arizona's been pretty good, so it's actually going to be a pretty good test of whether Arizona can sustain this momentum on the glass that they've had.
Arizona last year, when they went to Los Angeles, had no answer for Nick Rokosevic. Yeah. He was 13 of 17 from the field, 27 points, shot 76% from the field. I mean, he was dominant. And I know last year's Arizona team wasn't good, but he's been a problem for Arizona to guard for the last couple years.
Yeah, he's really tough and crafty. He's
good.
Yeah.
Good rebounding, yeah. Good shooter.
And I was going to say, how much did Arizona, or how much did USC out-rebound Arizona during that game in Los Angeles? Because I think it was by a large margin.
Well, that's, yeah.
But that was
an unusual for last year's team. Yeah.
That was last year's
51-39.
Yeah. Yeah, see? Yeah. But this year's team, one of their biggest issues, you know, at the start of the year and really at that halfway point, was rebounding. They've kind of started to figure it out. Sean Miller called it the carbon monoxide stat a few weeks ago.
And the Achilles heel. He kept, you know, he uses all these analogies. I'm surprised he didn't pull out a football one for that, but there probably is one somewhere.
You go back to the last couple games in terms of rebounding that the Wildcats have won. Against Washington, it was pretty even, 37-36, but the difference, Arizona had 12 offensive rebounds compared to 6 for Washington. You go to the Washington State game, 49 rebounds for Arizona, 36 for Wazoo. Got them on the offensive end, 15-5. So Sean Miller has been hammering down the point of rebounding for the last month. And what do you know, when Arizona's rebounding, they're finding more ways to win.
Yeah.
It's so funny because rebounding, I was talking to Ryan Finley, our editor, about it, and rebounding is critical, but to write about it is difficult. Like, what do you say about rebounding? It's not really a sexy thing to talk about. When Miller was talking about it today, half the people looked like their eyes were glazed over. I mean, it's just like rebounding. We got to rebound. But, you know, it really is significant. And you know,
how does one write about rebounding? Tell
that's
us.
What
how
I
got to
figure out. That's my challenge today and tomorrow, probably, to figure out exactly how. But. You know, it's funny because, I mean, certainly there are some technical aspects to it, but a lot of it just comes down to to focus and toughness and being locked in and you know, assuming guys are relatively comparable. So it's not like you can say, well, his release is, you know, we worked on his release or we did that or this or that. I mean, you know, it's a little, it's more of a general thing than that.
Yeah. I've always wanted to pick the brains of guys who were great rebounders, guys like Charles Barkley. Like, how do you, you are the true artist of rebounding. How do you do it?
Yeah, I mean, I think some of it is like having a knack for what angle it might, a shot might come off, you know, knowing your geometry or whatever you want to say. But I mean, a lot of it is just getting locked into it. But that's why I asked Miller today. What has been the technical key to making this improvement you guys have been making? And you know, he basically said, guys are just locking in better, and we're getting our guards to rebound better, or whatever he said. You know, things like that.
But with this challenge against USC, you know, Onyeka Okongwu, he's averaging 16.7 points per game and 9.1 rebounds. I mean, he is a consistent double-double night in and night out. And just like every other team this year, when they play a team like Arizona, even just the name itself, you're going to expect a team to really bring out their A game. So I'm expecting Onyeka to have one of his best games of the year. Is this a better matchup for a fan than Zeke Nnaji versus Isaiah Stewart? Because I'm assuming it's going to be Zeke and Onyeka going toe-to-toe Thursday night. Do you think that this could be a better one-on-one matchup for a lot of fans to see versus the one last weekend with Stewart?
That's a good point. It could be. You know, I thought, you know, Arizona typically mixes it up. They played both, you know, they had Lee and you know, Nnaji both playing against Stewart at times, a little bit of Kristen Koloko there as well. So, you know, it'll be a lot of that tomorrow night. But it is interesting. They're maybe a little more, maybe a tiny bit more similar than Stewart and Nnaji are. It'll be interesting to see. I'm as curious as anybody to see how it breaks down.
Yeah.
I mean, we thought that Zeke Nnaji and Isaiah Stewart was going to be the big factor in the Washington game. And at times it was. Stewart didn't have his best night, 3 of 13 for 9 points. And Zeke was 4 of 11, 9 points. He had some foul trouble that he was dealing with, which allowed Stone Gettings to open up the court. But you never know. Zeke could get in foul trouble. But Onyeka, I think it's going to be definitely a key battle inside.
Yeah. And also, you know, one thing that we also discussed with Sean Miller today was the four out, one in. With, you know, Stone Gettings being in the starting lineup, he's the stretch forward. He can really knock down a three-point shot if it's open, but it just gives Arizona a lot of spacing. Is this the way to beat a 2-3 zone? Because when you have all these guys on the perimeter, and then you can put it down low to a guy like Zeke Nnaji, or if Stone Gettings can get a mid-range shot, I mean, they're very effective. Zeke Nnaji is probably, what, one of the country's top field goal percentage leader, right?
Yeah, he's shooting 62%, which is still top 10, I think.
So do you think that Stone Gettings, him in the starting lineup, was the answer all along? And it's nothing against Chase Jeter. I think Chase Jeter is still an important piece to this team if they want to go far in the NCAA tournament, because you need that kind of depth on your front court. But was this the answer Arizona needed all along?
Well, they were leaning that way, and there were a lot of times they played those two guys like that when Jeter was out, and so it wasn't a surprise to see him go that way. And then when Jeter kind of slumped a little bit in Oregon, that made it the perfect time to make the switch. That's what they've done. I mean, there's no question it's helped spacing, like we were talking about, and you know, and especially because it not only does he space you out, but then you have, you know, Nnaji in there inside, and some teams have tried and been doubling or making an emphasis on him. But with Gettings on the outside, it makes it really a tricky call for the defense on what are they going to do with their personnel.
I saw a national writer after the Washington State game this weekend write something to the effect of, you know, why wasn't this Sean Miller's lineup all along? Mm-hmm. But Stone Gettings was out for over a month with the facial fracture, so we didn't really get to see, you know, the first month of the season was a lot of experimenting. You're giving the nod to Chase Jeter, who's been the starter for this team. He was the returner, top scorer from last year returning, so off the bat he was going to get the start. And then once Starn Gettings in that Wooden Legacy tournament started to find himself, boom, gets that facial fracture, and he's out for the next month. And, you know, we don't know what would have happened had he stayed healthy. But now we're finally seeing what he can do when he is healthy and playing big minutes. And he's, you can make the argument, he's also one of Arizona's best shooters, shooting 51% from the field right now, 47% from three. He's the guy that the zone buster. He's an big upgrade over what Ryan Luther did last year, where you can just get him in the paint and do the little turnaround shot. He's good there. He can shoot from outside. He is the zone buster
that's
right
disrespectful.
Now.
He is. Yeah. He is what we thought Ryan Luther was going to be. Right.
Yeah. I mean,
you're not wrong. You're not wrong.
Yeah. He's. Yeah. He's been exceeding expectations probably in that respect.
He's like a modern day Kevin Love. But, if he does rebound well.
That's saying a lot, but yeah, I mean to
a poor man's Kevin Love.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, there's no disrespect to anybody, but yeah, Kevin Love is something else. So, but anyway, I think Alec hit it on the head though. You have to start Chase Jeter for the first month of the year because he opted to come back. He's been your starter. He's, you know, a good guy, does all the right things, etc. So, you know, that was understandable. But I think the whole thing about a lot of this team was the first month of the season, the way I view it, it was almost kind of, I mean, they had to have some easy games at Tessa, but it was almost kind of like wasted ground because they had a lot of home games and you weren't really sure, they weren't really able to test themselves except for playing Illinois. And at that point of the year, Illinois was not playing the way they are now. So you didn't really know what worked. And then, like Alex says, then Stone starts coming along and then he gets clocked at against Penn, and that's it. And then you don't know what's going on for him for a month. And he comes back, and he's obviously has to come back slowly. So it's, you know, you wonder, yeah, maybe if he wasn't hurt, maybe he would have taken over the role before St. John's, and maybe they would have won that game.
Yeah.
Who knows? A lot of
what ifs. And the recovery, like you said, afterwards, he probably won't admit it, but I know if I had a facial fracture and I just get thrown back into the mix, I'm going to be a little gun-shy.
Yeah, I think it was the concussion more than anything, too. It's just, you know, concussion, especially nowadays, you have to err on the side of caution. And I think as a player, too, you're still in the back of your mind thinking, what if I get hit here? You know, is this going to happen again? And he seems to have handled that really well.
Dylan Smith took the podium during the weekly press conference, and David Kelly from KVOA asked him about, you know, the passing of Kobe, and that translated to shoes because Arizona wore Kobe 5s for the entire weekend. Dylan Smith didn't
most
wear
of them wore them on almost all of them wore it on Thursday
in Washington.
Then about two thirds did against Wazoo. Yeah,
yeah. And then Dylan Smith said he didn't wear the Kobe's against Washington
right.
State. But then it got into this conversation about shoes and, you know, what do you do? How do you wear them? 12 to 13 pairs of shoes throughout entire season.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's why I asked him that, because I always wonder about these guys. And are they superstitious? Is it they have to have a new shoe on? I always thought, like, don't you want to break them in and wear that same shoe for a while? Why would you want to wear a different pair every game? But, yeah, so he rotates them back. And the reason I asked him is because he said he liked the Kobe 5s. But he still played in different ones on Saturday, so why not stick with the Kobe 5s if you liked them? But he likes that's what he does. And then he said the Giannis ones have been the most comfortable.
It's a fashion
yeah,
thing. He says he likes to switch it up. And I thought this is one of the best quotes of the year from a student athlete. We get a lot of free shoes,
yeah.
So why not wear them? Dylan
right?
Smith, 2020.
That was pretty good.
You got them.
Yeah, I mean, you go to Arizona, you get. You're getting the Giannis shoes, you're getting the KDs, the Kobe's, the LeBrons. It's 12 to 13 pairs in his closet. I'm sure a couple other players have similar wardrobes where they're rotating in shoes. Why not wear them?
The ultimate shoe king, and I'm not sure any U of A player will ever be able to top this, Alonzo Trier.
Yeah.
Remember Alonzo Trier, I asked him in the NCAA tournament during going back to that 2016-17 season, because he decided to come out and wear purple and gold Kobe's. And then, it's funny, he goes back into the locker room to change them because they told him, you can't wear them because they're not Arizona colors.
Yeah.
Can't wear purple and gold shoes. And then so I decided to ask him, well, like, what's your sneaker collection like? And he said, yeah, I have at least over 200 pairs of sneakers. And at the Arizona locker room, he had probably about 20 to 30 pairs just on deck, sitting in trash bags or closets or whatever. It's ridiculous.
I don't even know how they have room for him, yeah. I think Stanley Johnson was up there as far as collecting, and he was the one who committed with shoes. Do you remember that?
Yeah, that's right.
Instead of the hat, he pulled up a pair of shoes that had the U of A on the back or whatever. Yeah.
So you've learned a lot about shoes over the last couple of years.
Yeah, I
right?
think it's fascinating because I'm not in that realm, you know, as a consumer. I have no interest in that. But I do have an interest in it and watching what guys do and what motivates them. And yeah, that is it really is kind of a thing. That's why I asked Dylan, are you superstitious? Do you keep the same shoes after you shot? He said no. So I thought that was interesting. I would have thought he would have. I mean, you know. But yeah, there's all kinds of things that motivate him. And for guys like Trier and probably Stanley Johnson, too, it did seem like it's like, you know, a fashion thing. And they're just passionate about it. I mean, just like a hobby, you know, like collecting whatever, yeah. You know.
So Arizona will take on USC. This Thursday tip-off is set for 7 o'clock at the McHale Center. Guys, any last thoughts on this game coming up on Thursday? And just the overall L.A. I mean, it's not a trip. The L.A. teams are coming to Tucson to face the Arizona teams.
Arizona can open up, start to separate itself from the rest of the Pac-12 teams at the top five with wins this weekend. USC is in that mix, and Arizona has four of the next six games at home. So you talk about, you know, potentially winning, you know, four games at home. And then, you know, if you get a road split, maybe it's the Cal-Stanford trip or possibly winning at Stanford. So you're talking about potentially a 5-1 over the next six games for the Wildcats if all things go according to plan. And this is when Sean Miller teams usually start to find their stride, especially the freshmen. And that's what Miller harped on today was these guys are finally starting to figure it out. And, you know, I'm not going to go as far as to say Arizona's going to win the Pac-12 outright, but if they want it to, I mean, this is their shot right here. So
yeah.
I like where they're at right now.
Yeah. Absolutely. This is the time to make a move. And might be worth mentioning, and I'm sure we'll mention it next week, but Sean Miller has never lost to Stanford. So as good as they are, we'll see if that happens. And they've also been really good in the Bay Area in general. So they actually have the potential here to rip off, you know, five or six wins in the next six games, possibly. And if they do that, they're in a great position. But can they? You know, I don't know. I will say this about SC. I mean, not only do they rebound well and they're tough, but they're a really good road team. So that's, you know, playing here is not going to bother them. And in fact, that they might be because their home arena is not always so great atmosphere wise, they might be the kind of team that actually prefers to play on the road. So,
and also, I know this sounds cliche, but I mean, you really have to be one game at a time mentality, because what I'm afraid, what Arizona's going to do, they'll sweep the LA schools, they'll take care of USC and UCLA at home. Then they go on the Bay Area trip, and Dylan Smith, Sean Miller, they raved about Stanford in the press conference. That game's on Saturday. They have a Thursday game against Cal.
Trap game.
And that, to me, you know, hey, Arizona has won four in a row. They got this primetime matchup against Stanford on Saturday. That Thursday game against Cal, I think that could be a game where Arizona trips up if they overlook the Bears. And they would really put themselves in an interesting situation where, okay, you lose or you win four in a row, and then you lose two on the road in the Bay Area. So these next couple weeks are going to be very important for the Arizona Wildcats if they want to get any separation in the Pac-12. We'll have more coverage on the Wildcaster app. Make sure you download it. It's free and available on the App Store and Google Play. Follow that guy, Bruce Pascoe, on Twitter, at Bruce Pascoe. Follow my man, Alec White. Alec, what's your Twitter handle?
At AlecWhite_UA.
And also make sure you follow the Wildcaster on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram for all of our social media content. And subscribe to the Wildcast podcast on Apple Podcasts. Number 23, Arizona versus USC. 7 o'clock tip-off this Thursday at McHale Center. For Bruce, for Alec, I'm Justin. Thanks for listening.
We want to thank our sponsor, Great Western Bank, a proud supporter of the Wildcast podcast. At Great Western Bank, they focus on serving family-owned businesses and their overall financial needs. Whether your company needs increased working capital, equipment or SBA financing, purchasing or renovating a building or construction financing, Great Western Bank has the expertise to work through your specific financial needs. Visit the Great Western Bank branch on Campbell between Glen and Fort Lowell or call 520-325-1135 to talk to any of the business bankers about your specific needs. Member FDIC.